Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 26 of Could It Be Podcast. Now, if you've listened to or watched episode 25, it's where I joined Brandy from Be Real Babe Podcast in Canada to talk about my breast implant illness story. Brandy touched on the fact that she was considering getting breast implants herself years ago, and after hearing about breast implant illness, she's glad that she wasn't able to get them done in the end. So I thought it might be a good opportunity to get Brandy onto the show to share her reasons for not getting breast implants and the things that she's gone through to get to a level of self-acceptance now that she hasn't had breast implants. She shares some really awesome stuff on her podcast, so if you haven't listened to Be Real Babe yet, be sure to jump on and give them a like and a follow. I'll tag them in the show notes. But enjoy the episode. This is Brandy's story. Hello, Brandy. How are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show. So if you've listened to the previous episode, it's where I jumped onto Brandy's podcast. And we've swapped roles today. Now I'm the interviewer. So I thought we'd start with if you could tell us like where you're joining me from today and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. So I don't know how familiar I'm starting out really good. Your followers, your listeners know about Canada, but I'm from Canada and I'm from a province called British Columbia. I live in the Okanagan Valley. So that's kind of like the California of Canada is what usually people refer it to. It's kind of like a wine country, cannabis country, all lakes and mountains and trees and nature. And so that's where I'm currently living right now. I'm 36 years old. By day, I am an inventory planner for a cannabis company. It's legal here in Canada. So don't think I'm in the legal market. Yeah, don't at me. It's legal here. I've been in it since day one in 2018. And so I've really been able to watch the industry progress. I started as a bud tender, which is someone who sells it, for those that don't know, legally. And then now I'm kind of in corporate where I'm in charge of facilities across the country. So it's very cool. At nighttime, I'm a podcaster as well. That's how we met. And thank you so much for doing this and having me on. I've never been a guest on one episode. So I'm definitely hella nervous because like, I'm used to being in charge and and asking the questions, and but this is so great. So yeah, so a podcaster at nighttime. I live with my spouse. We've been together for 6 years. We have three cats. I share very much that, you know, I have like infertility problems. We don't have kids. We have cats. And yeah, my goal in life is just to help people feel heard and just be real and be honest and vulnerable so people feel good in doing that themselves. And yeah, I have a whole podcast. We're on episode 120 right now, I believe. So yeah, if you need to know more about me, I've got a lot. I talk a lot.
For sure. Tell us a little bit about the podcast, like how it started and what you talk about.
So we talk about everything. We're definitely interested in talking about real experiences. When we started off, it was about a year into the pandemic, and being in Canada and just like you guys as well, we had very heavy restrictions. So we weren't able to really connect and talk to anybody. And it felt like the world was just really heavy and people were very divisive and angry and with all good reasons. And we're just like, how do we connect to people again? How do we be a positive light? I had kind of started like an online dance classes to kind of get people up and moving, because I used to teach cardio back in the day and people were like, please just do something. And I got in a lot of trouble on Facebook, y'all, like a lot. They did not like, because all the music copyrights, and I get it, but I was just, you know, I was just trying to help people like find positivity. And then I met my first co-host, I have three now, through a mutual friend online. And we were just very both outspoken about like just throwing our mind out there and just asking questions and just word vomiting. And we both really wanted to find a way to do this. And we're like, hey, do you want to have a podcast after talking a couple months? And she's like, yeah, let's do it. So I literally had no idea what I'm doing. I still don't know what I'm doing. we started on Anchor, just our voices. And we thought we didn't want to be opinionated or political. We wanted to share experiences. We wanted to talk about mental health and infertility and divorce and just things that we found that people don't really talk about. But when you're vocal about it, you get so many people thanking you and they start opening up and you start getting all these connections and you start relating to people and I don't know, just really empathetic. So I always like to listen. And it just kind of all fell together. So we spent our first couple seasons talking about, like I said, mental health, the pressures of being a parent and or not a parent, or infertility and miscarriage and, you know, surrogates. Like, we've literally touched on every human experience, like addictions and what was it like growing up in the 80s and the 90s. And then right at the end of season two, that's when we started talking about BII. And we were starting, because neither of us had breast implants or that experience, so we were kind of nervous about speaking on it. So we started reaching out and having guests speak about things that we never experienced. So we started with Botox illness, and then we went to breast implant illness. And we've had 5 episodes on it since, one of yours, 2 Canadian girls, and 4 gals from the Americas. And it's, yeah, we started December 2021. I wrote it down. It's the end of season 2, speaking out, not speaking out, but trying to bring awareness to BII, even though we had no experience in it, but we thought it was important to share. Yeah.
Absolutely.
In a nutshell.
And thank you for sharing it as well. Like, you know, going through the experience and sharing it is one thing, but then not going through it and still sharing and still advocating for it, it's huge to me. So thank you. Thank you for what you do.
Yes,
so the podcast is called Be Real Babe.
Yeah, the Be Real Babe podcast. Yeah. Yep. We are on all the same ones you are, like Spotify, Apple. We're on YouTube. We're also on Rumble. Well, we've gotten a little bit of trouble on YouTube, unfortunately, because like I said, we like to talk about everything. We don't want to hold something back just because it's controversial. We feel like it's more important to get it out there, and we're okay to say we were wrong about something. We're okay to say maybe that opinion wasn't right and grow. And we're okay to show our audience that we can grow and we can change our opinions and maybe we're wrong. And we say right from the beginning, we don't know what we're talking about. We're just a bunch of Canadians just talking shit, you know, and like, this opening conversations up. And breast implant illness and breast implants in general, I noticed it was a very touchy subject with, I totally understand why. But I was like, I feel like when something's hard to talk about, I feel like that's when I have to like open the conversation, because what I was seeing was a bunch of you getting gaslit from the medical industry and from your family and friends and people around me. And I was like, nah, I don't like that. And so the only way I know what to do is just talk about it and bring what I hope is awareness to, you know, I don't have a huge platform, but there's quite a few people that have reached out and been like, holy shit, this is what's happening to me. Thank you for sharing it. And, you know, survivors like yourself. So, and equally thank you to you guys, because if you guys weren't talking about it, I would be probably in the exact same position you guys were in. Right. So I thank my lucky stars that you guys have been honest and real too. And so it's kind of like an exchange for me, you know, thank you for saving me. And in return, I'm going to amplify as many voices that have suffered from this as I can.
Absolutely. Thank you. So your story is very different to any of the other guests that I've had on the podcast. So I'll just open the floor. Tell us your story around not getting breast implants.
Yeah. So as I said, I'm 36 years old. I think we're around the same age. So, I don't know about you, but, when I was around a teenager, it was heavy focused Playboy, right? And as you guys can see here, if you're seeing, you can't see, I have brown hair, brown eyes, and no boobs. So I am not a playmate by standards. And so I grew up, my mom was very young, and her spouse was 9 years younger than her. So he was, you know, like in his like mid to late 20s, while I was becoming a young woman, and all around me were posters of strippers. And like, you know, I understand that's totally normal. I'm not bashing that. But at the time it was like Much Music and Playboy, and it was like all this, like every woman is just this perfect blonde hair, blue eye, big tit woman. And that is far from what I am. I'm very more of like a, you know, a European French kind of look, not that, you know, Swiss beauty. And so I think at that age, at early like 12 or on, I always just felt like I was never quite a woman, and as womanly as I could be. And so I think that's when the self-hate started. And then I remember in grade 8, of course I'm wearing a push-up bra, like a bra, like a bralette, and there's no reason to, like absolutely no reason, but you know, everyone else around me is. So I you know, I have a little bit. And I remember a boy like snapping it, and I think it was like grade 8. He ended up dating me later in life, which is kind of funny, but he said, oh, like, you don't need this. And I was just devastated. And I was like, I am nothing. Like, oh, it just started from there. Right. And then you just notice all the girls that had bigger boobs had all the attention, and, you know, and Much Music and all that was very like, it was Britney Spears era, Christina Aguilera, you know, like it was always on my mind. Like it never went away. And then if you go onto my podcast, you hear a lot more about my infertility, but I was struggling with my lady areas at the time, and there's talks of me maybe not being able to have a baby because I just had, like, you know, at a young age, a lot of issues. So I've got, you know, no boobs and then problems with my end. So it was just a really hard time to, you know, at the same thing. But I'm always like, breast implants weren't even a thought, obviously, as a teenager. And in my 20s, I kind of thought about it, but I was just so young and partying that I just drowned myself in partying and didn't really think about those kind of things. But as I got to like my mid 20s and I started getting into the fitness industry, and I started seeing all these bikini models, and it was just like, oh, your frame would look so much better if you just had fake boobs. And it would, like, you know, you've got a waist and an ass and you're just missing boobs. And it was always about like how I was missing boobs and just get breast implants. And I was just like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Everyone's getting them. I should get them. But I just never had like the money. Like, it was always like, I just can't spend. And then I'm terrified of going under the needle. So I'm like, there's a couple things. And I also have been a person that, like, I react to everything. So there's all these thoughts in my head. And then I got really into fitness and just like, you know, you don't want to skip anything. And I don't want to skip chest day. And so it was just this constant battle of like, okay, I went to fitness and I lost any boob that I had. And all these women are telling me to do that. And everyone's like, but it's okay. It's just, it's so easy. Everyone has them. There's no problem. But then you're also fighting with, and I don't know if anybody else relates to me, I'm going to say this is a me thing, is like, I didn't want to get them because I didn't want people to know I was insecure about it. And because I'm so flat that if I got them, it would be very obvious that I got them. And so then I think that in my mind, I'm like, then what I think is everyone judging me because I'm, you know what I mean? It was just like this fucking spiral that no matter what I did, I felt like I always was going to hate myself. And I was like, okay, well, you're not going to pay the money because you don't have the money. And you're a baby and you're not going to go for surgery. So like, what can you do? Because you're not going to ever have these. And so I just was like, I just have to work on my mindset about it, I guess, and find the right spouse, right? Like, that's huge. I think we talked about it on your last episode. It's really the, you know, having a good spouse. You know, he's an ass man, so it's fantastic. I can build that in the gym. I try to build the boobies and they keep going away. So yeah, that's the main
reason. Did you find that I guess we can call it insecurity, did impact relationships and dating for you?
Oh yeah. Not like, and I always thought like anytime my spouse would look at someone with a bigger boobs, my immediate thought was, oh, did he wish I had bigger boobs? And you know, like I never stuffed my bra because a girl in junior high did, and someone caught her and pulled it out. And it was like the most mortifying thing I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, okay, I definitely cannot do that. Like, that was just, it was terrible. But I used to always buy like those triple cup boob bras at La Senza, and then I would get the cutlet. So it was just like, it looked like I had like something, but I was always worried because I was like, oh, but when we go home, like if I hooked up with someone, like those cutlets are going to fall out and they're going to see that like I have nothing. And you know, that's especially in my early 20s, I wasn't into fitness. So I didn't really have the ass that I have now. So it was really like, oh man, I got nothing going for me. And like, yeah, it was just always a constant. And then it was like, oh, I'm too poor to even buy those. Right. And then it's just such a terrible thought process. It's not a good one.
No. Like looking back myself, like at some of the relationships I had when I was younger, I dated some horrible people. And I know for sure that like one of them, after we broke up, I went and got braces because he used to say, oh, your teeth are terrible. Like, and I know that if I hadn't had implants before that relationship, I probably would have gone and got them afterwards because of like, he was constantly talking me down, like, you know, looking back on, I was 22. And looking at the relationship that his parents had, it was very similar. Yeah. Like, his dad was always putting his mum down. Like, she wasn't allowed to talk to me because, I don't know, maybe an independent, strong woman might
change her.
You know, talk about that relationship. I don't know. Like, that's not normal that he speaks to you like that.
No.
But yeah, like, looking back, dating the wrong partner could have absolutely been a change for me as well. Like, the cause of getting them. So I already had them because of other reasons, but it can make such a difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when I don't think I ever had, not one boyfriend ever complained to me or said anything. Like, they would always reassure me, like, you know, a handful is enough, da 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 da. And it's like, yeah, and I totally agree, and that's great. But then you see how people react to women with bigger boobs, or like, you know, you can kind of see the side eye, which is fine, obviously, it's totally allowed. But that just, like, when you don't know how to keep your own insecurities as yourself, you easily project that onto your spouse and others, right? Like, they don't even have to be doing something. And you just like, in our minds are very easy to be like, well, he's obviously looking at her because she's got big knockers and I don't. And now I'm less than, where it's like, even if he is looking at her big knockers, that doesn't make you any less, you know? So it's like having those conversation changes. And I think it's important to be open with your spouse in those moments. Like, my spouse is very aware how insecure I have been. I'm better now because I'm in the gym now. And, you know, especially doing those chest supported things, I'm like, fuck, I'm so happy. I don't have to worry about that. Like, you know, you start to, I'm in my late 30s now. So like, I'm not gonna ever go in for a surgery or anything. So I just really had to embrace it. And no one ever said anything. It was just more outside world, and what you see gets a lot of validation, which is so stupid to base things on. But we didn't know that then. We're still learning it now.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely. So hard. You mentioned before that you changed your mindset around it. Like, do you want to talk about, you know, what happened there and how you got to this
point? So I don't know if I said luckily for me, but I found out about breast implant illness about 4 to 5 years ago. I don't even honestly know how I came across it. It was just one day I came across a woman and she was talking about how she had to get her breast implants removed and how she was really sick because they didn't take the capsule out or did the on block. I'm terrible at the phrasing, but didn't take it all out, and how sick she was. And I could not believe this is a thing. And this was at a point in my life where I probably could have maybe afforded it. So I don't know if there's just like this universal that was just like, I'm going to put this in front of you right now. And so you don't do this. But yeah, I just seen that. And then I fell down this rabbit hole. And so at that moment I was like, okay, I know I would be this woman because I react to everything. So I cannot continue to find ways that I'm going to be able to afford or mentally prepare for breast implants. Like, I can't get them. So when it comes to like my body dysmorphia as well, it's kind of like, I don't want to get plastic surgery or Botox or filler. To each their own. I would highly suggest anybody, just to make sure you have informed consent. That is what our show is about, is wanting people to have more informed consent. And we believe that happens by sharing experiences, right? So I'm not comfortable with the risks of Botox and fillers or plastic surgery, just because I'm a freak of nature and I get afraid of things. But so I had to be like, so how do I work with this? And knowing that my life entirely changed with my mindset when it came to my career and my relationship, I was like, I need to start working on my mindset towards my inner talk. And I need to start interrupting the negative right off the bat. Like, step one is interrupting those thoughts. And just from learning, from going from a very lacking place to a place of abundance, I kind of took that same approach with my self-talk. And as I started, like, so like in the summer, I'd be like, oh, hiding and like trying to cover up, like not make it as noticeable that I had such small boobs, right? And then I moved to Kelowna, and Kelowna is, like I said, the California of Canada. It is very hot here. The less clothing you can wear, the better. So it was just a place where I like looked around and everybody around just didn't give a shit. Like, there was body sizes of all shapes and sizes wearing all different kind of bikinis. And I was like, okay, this is a place where I need to like start working with myself to not be so afraid to be out there, because no one cares. No one's looking. Like, no one really cares. And so I was like, you just need to start. Just do the things that are scary. And then I went out in like a thong and like a really like a bando, and no one said anything, and I didn't die. And so I was like, okay, I did the scary thing. And I was like interrupting myself every single time. I was like, oh, that person's looking. Who cares if they're looking, right? So it's like, for me, the step one on mindset work is like identifying those moments and stopping them. And then also not being upset with yourself when you do it as well. It's like, oh my God, why are you self-hating again? And I would get mad at myself. I'm like, this is just more negative. What are you doing? Like, yeah. So for me, it was kind of like, I'm not going to get those other options. So I need to figure out how to stop what's going on inside my head. And when I'm really can't, to reach out to my support system and be like, guys, help me. I'm stuck. I'm in a moment and I can't get out. And that's like, that is our crew, like our podcast crew. Like, we all do it. Right? Like, someone will be like, oh my God, I'm wearing a bathing suit. And we're like, they'll take pictures instead. We're like, you look amazing. Like, you're insane, you know? And so, yeah, it's, I think in anything, your mindset is so huge. And I know you had to work with that as well in lots of ways.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I would like to maybe just like talk about, you know, the girls that we've had on the show and kind of their experiences, because They really matter to me. Like, it was so great having you on the show as my first Australian. And the time frame is just totally so different. So that was a fun thing. But what I noticed with a guest on the show is that a lot of them had not been informed whatsoever about any sort of form of any illness. And if you go on the Health Canada, I think one of your questions was like, is BII, what is it like in Canada for that? And so one of our first guests, the first two ones, I don't want to fully share their stories, you know, that's theirs, but one of them had to fly to Costa Rica to get hers removed because no one around the area was really accepting this information or was really going to do the surgery because she had done the same thing. She was researching and she found breast implant illness and she fell down a rabbit hole and was like, oh my God, this is me. Like, I thought I was just being like a bad mom, like a lazy mom or something. But no one around here, because she was like very early on when she caught hers, like she's had hers out for quite a few years now and she got them quite a long time ago, but she had to go to Costa Rica to be able to get them out. And from getting them implanted to explanted was about over $30,000 Canadian. Like, that is an insane amount of money. And when she went in, it was like, oh, you're going to have these for the next 18 years of your life. There's never going to be any problems, da 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 da. And lo and behold, there's tons of problems and all said and done, $30,000. Our other gal in Canada, she was literally on the way to the hospital calling her husband saying, I'm sorry, I'm probably going to die, because she had no idea what was going on. They had no idea. She gets to the hospital. They have no idea what's going on, at the same time as when the FDA started actually talking about that black box warning for breast implants. And so that was all happening kind of around the same time. The first gal had Allergan breast implants, was you, and they were all, and Allergan's also in other lawsuits when it comes to Botox and fillers, I believe, as well. So that all kind of fell together. And same with the second gal, she was again on her deathbed and was like watching the news and was like, oh my God, this is it. And she went for immediate explant, and she had, they like crowdfunded to get them out for her because she didn't have the money. And luckily people came together and she was able to, but there's so many women in Canada that know about their breast implant illness that cannot afford it, especially with, I don't know how it is really in the rest of the world, but our prime minister has made it very difficult for people to live in this country. And so we've got single moms that are literally being killed, in my opinion, by their boobies. And because they can barely afford to support their children, explanting is just not on the table. And because it's a cosmetic surgery and it was selective, there's no funding or, you know, like anything in the budget to support these women. And it literally breaks my heart because some of them nearly died from this. So I feel like it has caught, because people are speaking out, a lot more people over the last couple of years know about this, which is amazing. But then they're now stuck in it because they can't afford it's minimum. It starts at like $6,000 Canadian minimum to even like have a basic surgery, let alone if you can even find someone in Canada that you trust, right? So I just think that that is a such a frustrating thing. Like, I just want women to know, you want to get your boobies done, I am, girl, do what you need to do. But just know that if you're sick or something happens down the road, that it could be this, you know, like, you guys have all been gaslit. You guys have all been told it's not your boobs, it's in your head. And this goes back to like the 70s, like women have been speaking out in silence about this for decades. And it, I don't know why, like, we've progressed, but I feel like surgeries have just gone up. I just, I don't know. I got to look at the stats for that, but I feel like they haven't decreased in implanting.
Do you know whether there's like any kind of registries in Canada, like, that you've heard of about, like, that records implants and, explant surgery?
I haven't heard of that, but I do know on Health Canada, I went to look before I came on the show, that they do kind of have like some stuff on the Health Canada, which would be like equal to the FDA. So they do have like a website that will say, like, it will show recalls and it shows like It does show as of last September, they updated to show that a sort of cancer, I think it's ACL, I can't remember the exact name.
BIAALCL,
That
yeah.
one. I was like, oh, I have so many acronyms at work. I really struggle with
Same.
acronyms. Like, frick, what is that acronym again? But it did show that. But that was just updated this last September. And that's because of the progress that the advocates in the States have done with the FDA. And now it's like leaking up into Canada and they've linked some of it, but it's really not like no one's gonna, most people aren't gonna go to the Health Canada website to see safety on breast implants. They're going to go to the surgeon that they're going to or that people have recommended to them and ask them. And depending on their ethical hearts will depend on what they tell them. And most girls that I've talked to, because we've shared this on the show, and there's lots of people that speak about it to me in our DMs that just aren't ready to speak about it on the show. I totally understand. They were not informed of this. If anything, they were told that they're super safe and you've got years and years and years. And, you know, some of these girls have had to have the silicone like scraped off of their rib cages because they leaked. So great, great that you can run over it with a car. I don't know who's going to be lying under a car and being ran over. But you know, there's other things like, you know, that concern me, like your body temperature and, you know, like things like that. And it's just been so apparent with when I knew about the Facebook page, I think it's like Nicole, a gal named Nicole, her Facebook
Healing with
page.
Nicole.
Yeah, I think it was like when I had heard about it originally, it was like maybe 10,000 people. And I think it's well over 50, 60,000 people in there now. And that just goes to show that women are suffering and the medical gaslighting has got to stop. It's got to stop. Like, just tell women what they're getting into, you know? And then that way, when it happens, they can react. Or like, if you're gonna get it, and my suggestion from outside is, if you're gonna get implants and you're still okay with it after you've done your research, make sure you have enough money to explant, because then that way, if something happens, you're not then trapped. That's kind of how I kind of see it, is like a safeguard, just so that you're not sick. Not some of these girls that have been rushed to the hospital and almost dying. You know, what if they couldn't get the money? What would have happened to her? I don't even want to know. Like, I don't.
No, that's it. Like, there's the physical implications of it where, people are having like all these medical conditions where I felt like my body was giving up on me. That was like the way I describe it. People talk about the fact that they feel like they're dying, and if it doesn't kill them, there's also the mental health impacts that it has down the track on these people. Like, some people who have breast implant illness, anxiety and depression are some of their symptoms, but then also the fact that you can't do much. You're constantly in pain, you're constantly tired, you're letting people down. If the actual implants themselves aren't causing anxiety and depression, then the symptoms would be doing that for some people as well. So there's that that they need to consider. I've only found out recently in the last few months, and it was through having Lauren on the podcast, that in Australia you can go onto a waiting list to see a surgeon to have it done through the public health system.
Oh, that's amazing.
You need specific things that have happened for it to go through that way.
It's
But
a
yeah,
start.
the like
It's a
Yeah, that's
start,
it,
right?
exactly.
Something.
And we've got a professor in Australia who is doing a study on breast implant illness, and they're looking to get about 1,000 women onto the study. At the last I heard, it was in the mid 350, like the 300s. So I made sure I joined, and I've promoted it on the podcasts and stuff. They also link in with a university in the UK who are doing a study too. But I haven't really heard much about anything happening in the US or Canada on studies.
No.
I have heard of one surgeon who was keeping their own
Data.
data on it, which I love because I'm a data nerd by day.
Save.
So, like, that's amazing that someone's taking it up on their own, but they shouldn't have to.
No.
This is something that,
The company should be doing this research, but it's just always biased, right? Like, we've had I've had Amanda, the holistic beauty coach. I'm not sure if you've had her on the show. We talked to her,
Not yet.
Dr. Amanda Savage Brown, who has the book release. We had her in before the book launched. So that was amazing. And like explant therapy, like that helped me a lot. Just because I had the same thought patterns you guys did. I just And she made me feel so good, because I'm always like, oh, I don't feel like I should have an opinion. She's like, Brandy, you're the same as us, but you just didn't get on that table. That there's the thought patterns are still there. The, you know, like you still, like you said, it's not just the physical, it's the mental. And also, a lot of these women like really thought they were going to feel better when they got them. And yeah, of course, maybe they felt better in their bodies, but then they got to fight this medical. So then in your mind, I would think that that's the frustrating part is like, I know this is better for me physically, but dang, like this made me feel so good. Like that is a whole another mental thought that I think when you're going in for the surgery, you don't even think that that's going to happen. That, hey, when I go in, I might not be able to keep these and I might have to mentally understand, you know, what that's going to be getting them out. And I don't think that's explained to women at all.
No, I was lucky when my surgeon did tell me that I'd need to have them reviewed every 10 to 15 years.
Good.
But that was the height of it, I think. And I, you know, getting them in at 19, I thought I'm going to be the inappropriate old granny in the nursing home flashing my boobs to everyone because they're still going to be perfect. Yeah. Like, you know, and you know, that's another thing that I'll have to think of down the track. Like, what are they going to be like when I'm older? I'm still reading Dr. Amanda Savage Brown's book. It's taking me a lot to read it. Like, it is amazing. She writes beautifully. It's really easy to read, but like mentally it's a struggle. Like I read one of the chapters and listened to one of the audio chapters, and my partner, this is right before we went in, like went to bed, my partner comes in and I'm crying my eyes out. He's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, oh, like I was reading about the Inner Fixer, I think it's called. And I don't remember a time where, even going back to 4-year-old Bianca, like, you know, my first memories of kindergarten, not trying to change the way I thought about myself or the way that I looked, like because of how other people viewed me. Like I was not quite back then, but I was always like a little bit on the heavier side as a kid, and you know, had the gooby haircut. Like, you know, I was always thinking like, oh, I need to suck my stomach in, or I don't know.
Just very
like,
aware
there was
of it.
Always this, constantly. Like how much more productive could someone's life be if they're not constantly going, oh, like, what is this person thinking of me? And like, yeah, I need to hold my stomach in, or I need to like stick my boobs out, or like, you know, there's a lot.
You do. And you're like, where could I have done with that time? Because what does that really matter in real life? Like, yes, of course we want to feel good about ourselves, but really at the end of the day, did the size of my boobs change me as a generous person? Did it change my kindness or my empathy? No, it actually, the only thing it took for me is, like you said, my time worrying about if other people thought that my boobs were, you know, big enough. And it was just like, oh, but we have been so ingrained by society, by the industries that we grew up and coming, that that was so important, is your sexual desire and how sexually desirable you were. And at that time, Playboy was huge and everyone was getting implants. And that's just what was quote unquote the most desirable. And if you weren't that, then you weren't desirable. So it was very easy, I think, for our generation to breed these thought patterns. And we did it for so long that when you're in your 30s and you start to break out of it, it is so hard to not be that fixer, to not constantly be like I have from birth control, I've had really bad hormone balancing. It's getting better, but I used to have really, really bad acne. It's kind of still there. And all I would think all day is like, as soon as someone looks at me, it's like, oh, they're looking at my pimple. They're looking at my pimple, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I maybe got over the boob part, but then all of a sudden I went to like my face, and like, and it's like you said, it's so that her book hit so hard because it's not just on the breast part. It's all the shit that you tell yourself you need to fix about yourself. And that is overwhelming to realize that you're your own worst enemy sometimes. Like, people aren't noticing that. Oh. People are not noticing that.
No, that's it. That's that. After speaking to, you know, so many women about troubles with breast implants, like you mentioned one before about being able to do certain things at the gym, what positives, I guess, have you seen to not having implants, obviously apart from BII?
I think for me, like, definitely the stuff at the gym, that was one of the biggest things that held me back, because when, like I said, when I was financially in the moment, I was like in like unhealthily addicted to fitness, where the thought, because it was just saving me in my really dark time. I just got divorced and I was like kind of lost, and I was like really heavy in the gym, but I had some extra money, and I was like, but yeah, I couldn't have the part of the fitness. And I think it helped me at a younger age to start working on my self-love. And I'm not saying that anybody that get implants is not working on self-love. I'm not saying that. I'm saying for myself, because it was a moment of being like, nothing on the exterior, no matter what I do, whether it's implants, Botox, plastic surgery, is actually going to make me love me. I don't think, like, I just didn't, because there's certain things, like when I hit a certain size or I looked a certain way at the gym, then I was going to be happy. And then I get there and I wasn't. So I was kind of already doing that with my body dysmorphia. So I think it put me in an advantage to not have them, to be pushed to start that mindset work and to really, how do I self-love now, right? So if I got implants and maybe I'd get them out like 10 years and then I have to start that journey then. So I think that was like an advantage. Obviously all the health complications. But like being a small chested woman, there's lots of advantages. And, you know, like I don't have to wear a bra. This is new to me this year. I know a lot of people don't think that they're like, oh, you could always not be there. But when you have little boobs and they're not the perfect breast implant, you're like, oh, someone's looking at my boobs because they look different, right? They look different when they're smaller. Like everyone knows when they have smaller, they look different. They don't look like the perfect cupped boobs. So I've been wearing like pasties, and that was new this year. And so the clothing that you can wear, I've been told, big boob, but then in the same sense, you guys can wear those like super cute bathing suits and it just looks so nice. And I buy them and I'm like, well, that didn't turn out right. and also like my mom has like triple Z boobs. She's actually had reductions done before. So I think that was also an advantage to me because I seen a woman with really large boobs and the problems that occurred. Like her back is always hurting. She can never find the right thing. It's always pulling her down. It's always giving her headaches. So, you know, and my grandma was complete opposite. She's very small, just like me. And so, you know, I got to see the positives and negatives of both and just from an outside point of view. And the clothing. I know I always get told, like, you always get to wear things and not worry about your tits hanging out. I'm like, I still have to worry about my nipples. Like, I still have those. So, like, yeah, I still have nipples, guys. And that's the most offensive part, apparently. So, you know, I do have to watch it. But, yeah, like, anything at the gym, like, I never have to worry about what I'm training. I can train whatever I want to. I can do push-ups. I can do chest because I'm at the desk. I'm constantly like this working. I'm sure you know that as well. You feel that. So that would be a big disadvantage to not be able to work my chest properly. And I know some women can, and that's amazing. But that's important to me as much as I hate chest day, so that I'm sitting up properly and not straining, you know? And so, yeah. But I have boob envy all the time and that'll never go away, and that's okay. I'll just stare at them and then you'll just have to deal with it, guys. Like, it's just what it is.
You mentioned before that you like worked in the fitness industry.
That's why we're like so same.
Yeah, we really are. How much was it sport, like how much were implants like talked about when you were working in the industry?
Well, luckily for me, I was more a part of a gym that was like women focused and like, you know, it wasn't like a bikini fitness. Like the gym that I'm working at now is like the most beautiful gym in probably, I think, all of Canada. It's just top of the line. So it attracts like high end athletes and bikini models. So it's more apparent now than it was back then. So it wasn't really talked about. It was more just like, you just seen it everywhere. And so when you're more of that bikini model body and people are like, oh, you should compete. And I'm looking at these women, no one really had to say anything. At the beginning, it was like, well, I'll never be able to look good because I don't have that frame. You know, I don't have boobs. And so it was mentioned a few times, like, well, if you ever to get in bikini, you know, it'd probably be good to have breast implants. And like, people would just say it like it's just such a small thing. Like, oh, just get boobs. Like, and I'm just like, that is a major surgery and major decision. Major
surgery, a foreign body in your body. It's a lot of money. It's time off the gym.
Like, it was just like so casual. And then like, I never wanted to be a bikini model or any of those things. But people always told me because I have a butt and because I'm thinner and I'm tall, you know, that I'd be great at doing that. And I just have like a stage presence because lots of energy because I used to teach like Zumba and cardio dance and jumping fitness. So I was always doing the high energy cardio stuff, which for me, it was like, I don't want boobs. Like jumping on a fucking trampoline with big tits, I'm sure is not fun. Like I
can confirm with implants, it is horrible. Right? Like you need to lock them down like double sports bra level.
Exactly.
CrossFit I had to look at my CrossFit workouts the day before because I'm like, oh, if there's skipping, I have to wear the heavy duty bra.
So it was like, that was another advantage is I was a jumping instructor. So that's on the trampolines. I jumped on it the other morning and I didn't wear a bra and I was like, okay, even though you got nothing, you still got to wear something. Cause like, that's not fun. but you know, so it was more or less like, an unspoken thing that if you wanted to be in a, and most girls do, they get, you hear them, they'll say, I got them so that I had the perfect curve for the bikini model look. And so if I was ever to compete, which was like super focused on over the last like 5-10 years, I wouldn't be able to compete with those girls, and I'm slim and don't have a lot of muscle, so I couldn't go in something like figure or anything like that. So it was like, if I was ever to do that, it would be in the bikini, but then I'd have to get breast implants to even, I would at the time feel, I feel like more now the industry is coming back and they're not, you know, they're, but most of the winners usually have, you know, breast implants or bigger boobs and stuff like that. So I think it was just kind of one of those things that in my mind, if I was to do that, that was just a written rule. You just had to get boobs or you're not going to look portioned properly. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm never going to do that because that's an expensive competition.
Yeah,
$10,000? No, like, what's the prize? If it's not $10,000, I'm not doing this. That sounds like I'll be out money here. So, yeah. And so for me, luckily, because I was in cardio, it wasn't really like someone was like, you should get them. It was more like if I ever wanted to compete, you would have to get breast implants. And I was like, okay, well, that's off the table then.
Yeah. So interesting because like, I feel like, because this is, I got mine done in 2006. So end of 2005, I got the tissue expanders done. July 2006, I think it was, I got the actual implants in. So I didn't have the sudden
boobs. Yeah.
Boobs.
Gradual.
Like, I had the, like they grew slowly over those few months with the expanders, and then I had them put in. People just knew that I had surgery. I probably told a couple of people I was closer with, but I don't know of, I only know of one other person who had implants put in. So I don't know whether there were other people that had them, but just, it wasn't spoken about so much. Like whether it was, you know, a bit taboo that people were getting breast implants in 2006, like it wasn't, you know, something
outwardly showing.
Proud of
making money off of now.
Yeah, that's it. But the only person that did, the other person that did get implants was, a woman who was doing bodybuilding competitions. I can't remember exactly which category she was in. She went to Thailand to get hers done. And so it's a lot cheaper to do that from Australia, to go on the holiday and have the implants. It's cheaper to have to pay for implants in Australia, I'm pretty sure. I wonder how she's doing now, like, because I'm not really in touch with anyone just from, like, you know, everyone having so many other jobs since. It's just not that anyone's not talking to each other, but I wonder how she's going, because, yeah, I don't know whether the people who have gone on the holidays to have the cosmetic surgery have had more impacts on BII, more ruptures or anything like that. But, you know, it's a different kind of healthcare system where they're going.
It's always interesting too. And I find like every, cause I, like I said, I haven't talked to Canadian girls, the girls down at the States, and obviously talking to you in Australia. And it's like, there's, things are a little bit different, but most of them are the same. But what the difference is in the healthcare system themselves varies very differently from country to country. And it's crazy when you, like I said, on the Health Canada website, it's kind of more like, oh, you're going to have some swelling, some pain. So I'm like, no anxiety, no like crippling pain. Like some of these women just thought they, like I said, were literally dying. Like I think you had Heidi on your show as well. Heidi was on our show. Yeah. And same thing with her. Like she was like, just could not.
She was planning a funeral.
How sad is that? Like, and now look at her, like she's just a bundle of energy. And same with, like, I don't know if you had Robin on your show, Robin Tout. I think that's how you say her last name. But yeah, she has been, for those that don't know, she had breast cancer, and that is one industry or one area of women that they really go for too, is, you know, and I'm going to say that as well, like in the trans community, I feel like they really attack all different types of women. Telling them, you know, you'll feel more like a woman by getting these things. And I think that when they go to the women that have had mastectomies and they tell them right out the gate, the first thing they're saying to them is, oh, you can just get breast implants. Like after they just went through that, I'm not saying that they shouldn't, and every woman needs to do what they need to do. But the fact that they're putting that in their heads the minute that they come out of there, like I would feel that that would spur even more self-questioning right out the gate. You know what I mean? When you're already going through something so wild, that when I learned her story, I was so pissed off. I was like, I know this has nothing to do with me and I don't have nearly as right to be mad, but how could they possibly do that to someone who's just survived cancer and having her breast removed? And then she said that having her breast implant illness was far worse than her cancer. How is that? How are we not talking about this more? I mean, we are, obviously, you know, that's, but just, you know, the fact that some people don't even know to this day that people suffer from that, it still blows my mind when I know people that have almost died from it, you know, it's, that's why we have podcasts, right?
I feel like it's moving in a better direction. I have had someone message me who had found my podcast. She was wanting to get breast implants and had Googled breast implants, and the first thing that came up for her was breast implant illness. So then she started looking into it, and that's how she found my podcast. And she's like, I've decided not to get them now because of, you know, things like your podcast. And
yeah, it feels like good.
You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not medically qualified in any way, but it's some person who's doing a podcast as a hobby that's the one that's making more noise than
the people that should be,
the, you know,
the industry making money off of them. And for me, like, I'm not saying eliminate or cancel. Like, I hate cancel culture. I'm not saying any of those things. I'm saying inform your patients of what could happen to a full extent, whether you think that that's backed by science. That's what bothers me. Well, there's no study, there's no data. Well, because it's not going to make you money. It's just like with a cannabis field, like most of the time it's not going to be researched medically because it would eliminate a lot of, it has, and I'm not medically speak, this is from people's experiences, has removed a lot of pharmaceuticals, and that doesn't make people money, right? You know, a plant that grows outside doesn't make as much as a chemical that's made in a, you know, a lab and all those kind of things. And so it's like, I struggle when people say, well, there's no studies on it, or the studies say, and it's like, but where are those studies coming from? Some of our guests have been a part of studies and they have shared that. And they never end. They just kind of fall. They never conclude. They never hear back about it. So these big companies can be like, oh, we did these studies. See, da, da, da. But they never actually close them, or they're biased. And it's like, that's just not good enough. It's not good enough. And these regulating bodies like the FDA and all that, and saying, well, they have black box warnings. Okay, are the patients seeing this? Are you showing them this?
Are the patients seeing the boxes?
I don't think so. No. I think they're probably like naked in a thing ready for surgery at that point. I don't think you bring them in and you show them, but you don't show them the box.
Well, I didn't realize this until I had Lauren on an episode. And she was talking about the fact that the implants need to sit in a specific solution for a specific amount of time before the surgery, and it's in the hours. I can't remember exactly how long, but they're obviously being taken out of the box with this warning. We don't have the warning here in Australia. Put into this solution, the box being thrown out, we're not seeing it. So I think there needs to be like a pamphlet, like simple as that, a pamphlet that is given out to anyone that has a consultation. Maybe even we need to go back to the fact that somebody will see a general practitioner to get the referral to the surgeon. Maybe that's something that, you know, the general practitioner doesn't necessarily need to talk about it themselves, but they can be like, yep, cool, I can give you this referral, but I also need to hand this to you just so that you're aware, because you can still then make that decision to have implants, no problems there. But then, you know, so many of us had all these symptoms for so long, we thought, you know, we were dying or our bodies were giving up on us. I thought that was the rest of my life. I'm like, oh my, like, I love being outdoors. I love hiking. But sometimes that would put me on the couch for the rest of the weekend if I went for a hike. The hike stopped being enjoyable because my muscles felt like they were going to blow up. Like, that's the only way I can describe it. And there was no, like, I didn't understand what was happening to my body. But if I had known about breast implant illness and the risks that it might cause that, then I might have been like, oh, okay, now I understand why this is happening.
Absolutely.
Then now I can sort of think about, like, go through that thought process of having them out. But I didn't rush it, but I wanted them out as quickly as possible. It's like, once I learned about BII, no, it wasn't even once I learned about it. It was like, I learned about it, had to sit with it for a bit, had to process it. Went to the Facebook groups, and like you said, you know, you see 50, 60,000 people. There's one that I came across that I swear has got about 100,000 people. It's an open group. And I'm like, this can't not be a thing if there's that many women that are jumping onto these groups to talk about it, to even, like, you know, some of us don't talk about it. We just sit there and watch what's going on in these groups. It's like, wow, that's validating my concern here. But then, yeah.
Especially when surgeons and doctors are just like, no, that's not it. I don't think that's it. And, you know, I'm not saying all of them are. There's a lot of great explant surgeons out there that fully believe, not believe, but, you know, I just don't always think it has to have like a diagnosis or a study to be real. And I just think that that is so insane that it's discrediting so many people, that some people will discredit all these people's experiences and being like, that's not it, for whatever reason, whether they don't want to admit it themselves because they make money off of it, or they support it, or maybe they themselves, they don't. But that's what bothers me. It's like, maybe that didn't happen to you. And I hope not. I don't want anybody to suffer from breast implant illness. Like, you should be able to do that and, you know, be perfect and in perfect health. But unfortunately, it comes with a risk. And there's nothing worse than hearing the women that we've talked to say, like you said, planning their funerals, thinking they're going to die. Like, when at the beginning of that, if they would have known, like, hey, these are the symptoms, they can immediately then make action to that, instead of thinking they were terrible mothers, they were lazy, they were, you know, worthless. They, like you said, this is the rest of my life. I can't even walk. And then you start wondering what your worth is and what's the point of moving on. And then depression kicks in, and then anxiety kicks in because you're so depressed. Like, it's just a plethora of these things where it's like, if you would have known that at the beginning, whether you chose to or not, at least if this happened, you could be like, okay, now I'm going to go talk to my doctor or whoever, my surgeon or other women, and see if this is it. You know, but I think it sucks that a lot of women get into this, they don't know that, and then they're sick, and for whatever reason, they don't want to make the connection, or maybe it isn't. But I think there's a lot of women that are just like, no, it's not it, because it's terrifying. You went through it to admit that, and then have to go through that other surgery, and then deal with the physical implications of explanting, and the mental and the spiritual and all of that. And I just think that we could save a lot of that shit if we just, like you said, had that pamphlet of being like, hey, these are people's experiences. It might not be yours. It could be. But most people I talk to that speak out about it, most doctors that I hear that speak out about it, say it's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of time. It, like, some people's bodies are really great at defending it. Some people's just are not. And it's just kind of like a roll of the dice, depending, you know, how your body was in the toxic load beforehand and how it's reacting to it. Same with explants. I've heard amazing explant stories to horror explant stories. Like, it all kind of is all over the place. And I think to prevent all this, we go back to the beginning. You need to get a referral to a plastic surgeon. You know, maybe your doctor, your therapist, is it the right decision for you? Are you fully aware of what you're going to be doing when this, here's all the complications? Yeah, you're good. You checked all the boxes. Okay, we're going to go to the surgeon, and the surgeon's going to say the same thing. I'm going to remind you, did the doctor say these things? You know, I find a lot of, in the medical field, it's a lot of like, well, I'm not a pharmaceutical, like, I'm not a pharmacist. And then the pharmacists say, well, I'm not a doctor. And then, you know, and it's just kind of like this, like, throwback and forth of like whose responsibility it is. And it is ours, but you're relying on these professionals, and they go to school and for that, so you trust them. And it sucks. Myself has been medically gaslit and hurt by the medical industry, and you're just, you, after you see it, you really struggle to trust it after. And I think that's another thing. I was just like, oh, they told me birth control was great, and I got personally violated by it. So if they're telling me breast implants are safe, and I'm seeing women saying they're not, I'm gonna side with the women. they steer me, and they don't make money off of me, so I'm gonna believe them.
Do you want to talk about your experience with birth control?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So long story short, I was on a bunch of different birth controls when I started, when I was about 15, 16 years old. I had terrible cramps, like make me throw up cramps. I had terrible acne. So the doctor was like, birth control, you know, it's safe, it's effective, there's no problems. You know, you're just a typical teenager. You know, they treated me for endometriosis because, or like tested me because my periods were so bad, like I would pass out. But there was never any talk about root cause. Like, was I eating? Was I drinking water? What was I doing in my personal life? I think I was like, you know, this huge stoner, smoked cigarettes. I don't think I drank water. I didn't eat. I didn't sleep. It wasn't a good time. And they never asked me any of those things. And so I tried every different birth control pill on the planet within, like, you know, 4 or 5 years. I was on the patch, which gave me blood clots, which was not great. So, you know, over the last couple years, that's when my biggest concern was, because I have a history of blood clots and miscarriages. And now that I look back, I actually think I had miscarriages when I was younger, but I just didn't know what was going on. Because as an adult having them, I was like, this is familiar. I have felt this pain before. And so, yeah, I went all these different pills, the patch, got off of it. Then I finally just went on a very light dose, and that seemed to have worked. You know, it didn't I didn't get pregnant. I wasn't as crazy. And then I got off birth control after I got married. I'm divorced now, and we were trying to have a baby, and I couldn't get pregnant. And that could have been for various reasons. I don't know. And then we divorced, and fast forward to my now spouse. We have had, I know for sure two, I think maybe three miscarriages over the last 6 years that we've been together. And like, I'm all good. I'm very healed. We actually just, I'm just launching an episode about that recently, about my whole from back to front to back. But I believe, and a lot of the doctors that I trust also agree, that the birth control pill is, you know, very well could be the reason why I cannot, conceive. Like, I can conceive, but I can't carry. And so we made the decisions, if we do have a baby, we are going to adopt. I'm 36. After you go through a couple of miscarriages, personally, I just don't want to put my body through that anymore. I don't want to put my mind through that anymore. It's a very painful thing to go through mentally. And then all those stories come back up, you know, of, especially with no boobs, like, how am I even a woman? Like, I can't do the one thing that women are supposed to do. I don't have boobs, you know, like, is very terrible stuff. And then what does that put your family and spouse through, right, as well? And so I haven't been on birth control. When I had my first miscarriage with my spouse, unfortunately, my body still thought I was pregnant for like a month and a little bit after. So I was having all of like the early stages of pregnancy, like morning sickness and just like all of those feelings without being pregnant. And I was just so done with fucking with my hormones. Like, I was like, I'm done. I can't go back on birth control. Like, I can't go through what I just went through and then slam my body. Like, I need, and I trusted him. And I was like, I'm sorry, this will change our relationship a little bit, 'cause you can't just have sex whenever, especially when you're, you know, worried about having miscarriages. You really want to be honing in on that. You know, it's only like 4 days that you really need to be careful. I'm not saying go, and I'm just saying for me, it was like, okay, can we do this? And he was like, hell yeah. So I've been naturally tracking my cycle for 4 years now, I believe. Yeah, 4 years now. And I will never go back on birth control if I don't have to. It just wasn't good for me. And I know that it brings a lot of solace to a lot of women. And so it's really hard to speak out sometimes against it, because so many people love it. And I totally understand. But if you're having issues with anxiety and depression, and you feel like you're crazy, and you don't know what things are, like, you know, just really make sure that your hormones are checked, with birth control, especially. I think you went through, we talked, I think, on our episode of your experience with it as well. And I would say majority of women that I speak to have had a terrible experience. And so, we just released, or just releasing this month, or depends on when this one comes out. We went into the dark history of birth control and where it started, and, what it did to the women of Puerto Rico, and the people that started it. And then when you get personally harassed by birth control, and then you know maybe the beginners, people's like dark history and what they believe birth control should do for the world, you kind of get even more mad. But yeah, long story short, birth control attacked me, I feel. I have no proof of that, but I don't think any doctor is gonna fully agree with me. That's all into big pharma, that's it, right? They're gonna be like, it's safe and effective, okay. Okay.
Yeah. You were saying as well about your skin before, like after coming off birth control. That was another thing that was
important. Yeah. So I went on birth control to help my acne. And then when I went off of it, because of the hormone imbalance, my face just exploded. I had a cystic acne where it was just like, it would be just like this mound, and it would sit there for like 3 or 4 months. And this was at the height of COVID too. And I also worked at a grow facility. So Health Canada requires, if you work with cannabis products, that you have a mask anyways. So I was already doing that for work on the floor with products, and then I'd come out, and then with COVID, I had to wear that too. So that cystic acne would just circle, and it was just like, I couldn't move my chin. And so I was like, I understand why women get off birth control and jump right back on it, because it wasn't this bad, right? But that's just what my body was trying to do to like start naturally balancing my hormones again, right? It'd been attacked since I was 16 for 10 whole years with different forms of hormones. I believe they're like hormone blockers in a sense, right? Because you don't have your natural flow of things. So I feel like birth control is just another form of hormone blocker. And yeah, it and I kind of not laugh, I'm not laughing about it, but they say when you're on birth control, when you're off, you also are attracted to different people. And it's kind of interesting because when I was on birth control, I was very different with my ex-husband than with my current boyfriend. They look very different. So I kind of giggle and say, well, yeah, that's kind of happened to me because they're very polar opposite looking, not like that either one is more than the other, but I just kind of giggled. I was like, yeah, actually, yeah. When I got birth control, I definitely was attracted to, you know, the tall, dark, handsome more than I was before. So it's just, it's very interesting. And I just urge women to look into it. Just again, informed consent. You do what you want, just be informed. Because yeah. I wasn't.
I find my, like now, I guess with the podcast, I've got certain pages that I follow. There's way more talk about the impacts of birth control. Ricky Lake has done some work around it. I know, like we grew up watching her. I would come home from school and I would watch her show. Go home from school. So yeah, she's talking about it. I don't know whether maybe she's got a book or a documentary. But you know, there's more talk that's happening. I'm like, this is something that I'll do an episode on, but, my GP sent me off for testing cause I've said to her since my explant, so implants are endocrine mm-hmm. disruptors. So mess with your hormones as well. I've had to have my Marina IUD taken out, which we've spoken about. And I still don't feel right. Like I'm not 100%. I'm gaining weight. There's like all these other things that are happening. And the only test that she could send me off for was one to see whether I had polycystic ovarian syndrome, which looked for three things like androgens, testosterone, and something else. And that came back normal. And so I said to her, like, is there anything else? She's like, is there anything else I can test? Because I knew I didn't have PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome. I'd looked at that before. And she's like, oh, not really. Like, and then she asked a few questions about, you know, are parents overweight?
Family history.
You know, what's it like in your family? And she basically said to me, oh, you know, I guess like it just is hereditary for you to carry more weight. I'm never going to be a slim person. Like it's just not my build. I'm opposite to you. I'm a very muscly person, but at the moment I'm carrying a lot more body fat than I feel is healthy. It's the amount that I'm carrying is not healthy at the moment. And I'm thinking long-term, mm-hmm. heart disease, like all that kind of thing, like strokes. Like, you know, my brother-in-law went through a stroke a couple of years ago and like seeing how that's impacted him and like my sister and the family and stuff, like, you know, he feels, I guess he carries a bit of guilt around it. It wasn't his fault. You know, it's a little bit of a medical thing, but like, you know, there's things that we can all do to try and have a healthier, longer life. And yeah, like I'm trying to do that, but then there's something that's not going right with my body. And the doctor's like, oh, you know, you're just bound to be fat, basically. And I was just blown away. So I've gone to see a naturopath. Like I was going to see an integrative GP, which is kind of like a hybrid GP naturopath. But the wait to see one of those is so long. And like after that experience with that GP, which I thought this GP surgery was really good. It wasn't my normal GP. No wonder why people are going and spending, like it's nearly $400 for your first visit with an integrative GP here. You get a little bit back through our Medicare, but you spend an hour with them, not 10 minutes. And they go through and ask all sorts of questions and they probably look at the root cause. Like I'm still waiting, but I've gone to see a naturopath in the meantime who's like listening to everything I'm telling her. She's like, oh, okay, it sounds like this could be linked to this. And she knew about breast implant illness. She knew about the toxins. She knew the terminology explant. Like she really listened to me. So I'm in the process at the moment. I've had the blood test. I'm waiting to hear back of around my thyroid and my hormone levels.
Is it thyroid? I feel like that might be the next place to look is thyroid. Cause I feel like a lot of women that can't figure out what's wrong, especially around weight gain or weight loss or inability to add muscle or add, you know, that's a problem with women. It was something I had a problem with and people always thought I would have the opposite thyroid problem where I couldn't put weight and I'm always cold and stuff like, and I still have those issues, but I don't want to go to a fucking doctor. I don't because I'm terrified of what they're going to say or what kind of pill they'll put me on or, you know, and that's where I'm the same way. I want to find a naturopath. And then I found one and then they offered Botox and I was like, I don't know about that. Like to each their own.
What did they offer?
It was just, I didn't look deep into it, but it was like, we offer Botox. And I was like, Okay. And like, and everyone to each their own, but I still, you know, medically wouldn't want to do it for myself because I'm a freak of nature. But yeah, it's crazy when you're trying to advocate for your health and you're just being told, well, that's just who you are. And you're just like, oh, okay. Mm. But this is, I don't, and like, there's nothing wrong with wanting to feel healthy. Like so many people, you know, you're like, oh, I just want to lose weight. People are like, you look great. And it's like, thank you. I'm not thinking about what I look. There's just a feeling when you feel inflamed. And that's what I felt like when I was on the end of birth control and on anxiety medication. I literally gained 30 pounds of water weight and I was inflamed over my entire body. And I was like, I don't feel good. I don't feel good in my body. Like this does not feel nice. And people are just like, oh, you look fine. Like, don't worry about it. And I was like, thank you. And that's so kind. But I don't feel good. It's not about looking. It's about feeling. Like I feel bloated. And as soon as I quit the anxiety medication, I quit birth control. After a couple months, I dropped 30 pounds like that. And I was like, okay, this is what my frame looks like. I'm not saying I need to be 100 pounds. That doesn't look good on my frame. 130 looks good. 165 did not look good. I know what my body looks like, right? I know what it looks like at 110 and 165. And I'm happy right in that middle. But you just feel it. And when people are saying, oh, that's just genetic. You're like, no, but I know what it feels like not to be this. So obviously it's not genetic. Like, help me. Don't just, I'm shocked they didn't just be like, here's a pill. Fix, it'll fix, go get this surgery. Oh, you know, like
I keep forgetting that she did this. She did offer, so there's this diabetes medication. It's one that people inject helps. Yeah. So she offered this, and I don't know whether she assumed, because there are a lot of people who don't have diabetes but want to lose weight that are going to their doctor asking for this medication.
I've heard that.
And I don't know whether she thought I was looking trying to achieve that. So when she first said, oh, there's this medication, and I didn't even think of that. I don't know whether they've got Duramine or Duramine over in Canada. It's like basically like it's got something like speed in it, and it switches off your, like, you just don't get hungry and you're like, you're really hyperactive. So you're like constantly moving, not eating, you drop heaps of weight. But I'm like, what?
That's just me on a regular.
Weight back again.
That's just me on a Tuesday.
And I thought that maybe she was about to introduce that, but she starts talking about this diabetes medication. And I spoke to her, so what, we're in April now, it was maybe start of March, maybe end of February, I can't exactly remember. And she was saying, oh, you know, there is this medication that people are taking at the moment. I'm like, is it Duramine? She's like, no, it's like a diabetes one. I'm like, wait, I've heard of this. She's like, oh, but like there's, you know, there's none available until June. And I'm like, wait a minute. So you're about to offer me a medication that people who need it with diabetes can't access until June. Mm-hmm. And then I'm about to come in like some hack and be like, oh, I'm just going to use it to like do some weight. Like, no, and like don't.
That's what I've heard too, is that there's a lot of people that are waiting for this medication, can't get it across the world. And then people are offering this as an alternative to weight loss when it's like, guys, like, the easiest formula to weight loss is what you're eating and how you're moving your body and how you're resting. There is not, people make it way more complicated, I think, because they want that quick fix. They want it overnight. Mm. And I was just actually looking in this group and one girl was like, oh, I've been working out for 3 weeks and I haven't seen any results. And I just kind of wrote down and I was like, not to be this way, but the way I look at it is like, how long did you take to get your body to where it is right now? Did it take 3 years to gain that extra 30 pounds, you know, on yourself or whatever it is, then maybe look at that. It's going to take 3 years to work that back off because putting it on is so much easier. Same with muscle. Like, muscle loss is different. Muscle loss is so much easier to, you know, lose muscle loss, but gaining it is so much harder, right? Where it's like with some people, gaining weight is so much easier. So in those 3 years, you know, you gain that. It's going to take you a little bit longer to adjust those habits, to, you know, let your body go in reverse. But everyone wants things right now. And I think that's why surgeries and stuff like that and these pills and this medicine is so appealing, because it's faster. But there's always going to be a risk to that, right? And most of the risk is you're not changing your lifestyle. You know, like even these fad diets, it's not changing your lifestyle because it's not sustainable. And that's why people don't do it. So I've never jumped on any diet. I've just been like, okay, I'm going to slowly start changing stuff. Like, I never ate a green in my life, so I just started throwing spinach in things that I wouldn't notice, like eggs, like just like three leaves. I'm like, okay, let's start here. And then now I'll eat a whole spinach salad, right? So many people like overcomplicate it. It's very simple. And what stresses me out and pisses me off is when people go to the doctor, it's not like, okay, what are you eating? How often are you sleeping? Are you moving your body, especially most of us work in an office? Are you getting up? Are you stretching? Are you doing this? Are you going outside? Are you seeing nature? Are you touching some grass? Like, are you just on social media all day? That doesn't get asked. It's, hey, there's a diabetic medicine that could help you, even though you didn't even ask me for that. Like, we got to do better. We got to do better.
Yeah.
We got to do better for everybody, for women, for everybody. Because that's stupid. I'm sorry you've had to go through all this shit. Thank you for speaking out against it. God dang.
Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be another episode once I sort of get the results, and I'm happy to come and join you again.
Yes. Because
like one thing I do hear about, and it's both women who've had implants and women who've had an IUD, mm-hmm. not just the one that I had, but other types as well. They've had Hashimoto's thyroiditis. I can't say it.
It's a big word.
And like, so like I think it's like a form of hypothyroidism where your thyroid is underactive.
Yes.
And blood tests that I had with my doctor in September, she's like, oh yeah, your thyroid levels are high. So what they're talking about is the thyroid stimulating hormone, or TSH. Mm-hmm. She's like, it's kind of high, but like, you know, wait a year and see if it's worse. I'm like, yeah, cool. I'll just gain another 20 kilos on top of the like 15 I've already, like, you know, I was just like what about the long-term with impacts of this? Anyway, I have joined the study here in Australia, and because I joined it after having my explant, I just gave them any blood tests I've had recently, like, because they actually give you a list of things they'd like you to have tested before you have your surgery and after it. But I didn't get that opportunity. So I just asked for any blood test from my doctor, and I looked at my TSH, and like, they give you the, like, your result, but then also a guide, like a bit of a, like, a, you know, next to it. I'm at 4.49 for my TSH levels. The top is 4.5.
And they didn't flag that? Like,
no, she was like, oh, wait another year. Like, how much worse can it get in you? I don't know.
Especially when you don't know what's causing it and they're not helping you figure it out. Then how do you try to mitigate that? It's like, oh, let's see in a year. So what, when it's like far beyond repair or like more damage is being done? Yeah. I don't understand that.
Yeah, that's it. Am I going to end up with some kind of permanent medical condition because I haven't managed it early?
Yeah.
So when I took the blood test at the naturopath, I didn't actually realize they were all the way back from September. And she was like, oh, like, looking at my TSH, is like, that is high. She goes, so one thing I've heard, and I don't know, like, I haven't sort of seen any confirmation of this, but I believe it, is when you have those guides on your blood test, that's actually from the 1960s, and it's based on an adult male. You know, it's not current, and it's not based on, like, different genders. Like, there's so many different differences
there is.
Like, between like our bodies. So the naturopath's like, look, the frame, like the guide that we use is a lot more narrow than that. I would consider that high. So I've gone off for a full thyroid panel. That wasn't even offered to me by my GP. It doesn't cost them any money. It takes them 2 seconds to put that referral together and send me off, and then I get another appointment with them. Like, I you know, the ovarian cysts that I've told you about, one doctor said to me, you've got gas, take an antacid, off you go. It wouldn't have taken her
2 seconds.
Any money, just 2 seconds to write a referral, to go and have an ultrasound, to find that it was there, possibly have it taken off and save my ovary. But no. Nah. So,
and that's why I don't,
you know,
I don't understand why they don't. Like, I can understand if, like, it was over pop.
If I was there every week and I was like, this is wrong with me, and this is wrong with me, and this is wrong with me. But like,
once in a while,
I'd never had a surgery.
Once in a while, like, do you not pay for that? Like, we pay for it in our taxes. Like, so many people are like, oh, Canada and their free healthcare. No, y'all, it's not free. We pay for it in the ridiculous amount of taxes that we pay. It's not free. Like, yes, we've got it more, and I'm not knocking it compared to other countries by any means. I know my privilege living in Canada, but we also pay a ridiculous amount of taxes where we would hope that that money is going back into. So yeah, we don't have to go to the hospital, have a baby. We don't pay in that moment like they do like in the States. But that comes from somewhere. Like my spouse, it's, especially with him, his, like, he'll get a paycheck and, you know, 45% of that is going to taxes. And it's like, and then everything we buy is inflated like 6 to 10% in taxes. And it's like, what is going on?
Mm.
And like, I don't know. And I think it's crazy that immediately when people come in and they say, I have these problems, the first question to doctors, GPs, isn't like the naturopaths. It's like, what are you eating? What's your habits like? Very in-depth, unique questions about your life and your lifestyle so that they can then, you know, apply that knowledge. When you're in the GP, it's just like, I find it's very, and not to knock them, but it's just very basic, you know, like, and like you said, it, if they don't know, that's okay. Most of them don't know about nutrition that much, you know, they don't learn that much supposedly in school, but then pass it off. Like, I just really hate how it's just like, oh, medication gone. It's not like, okay, maybe we'll give you medication for this Band-Aid, but I'd like you to go to this referral and let's look into this a little bit deeper. Like, it's like you have to fight tooth and nail. I have a friend right now, a coworker who has had nothing but crazy heart problems for the last like year and a half. Things have been going off and it's been really bad to the point where she has to like fight just to get into a cardiologist, even though she's, you know, had to go to the hospital. And it's just insane. The healthcare in Canada is just, it's nuts. It's falling apart right now. It's falling apart. Mm. And it's just, I don't know what else to do. And like I said, I have a girlfriend right now in the area and she is a mother of two. She doesn't get help at all from anybody. And she knows that her implants are killing her. And she was like, I feel sick all the time. I'm just worn down and, you know, watching the show and hearing these women, I know what that is, but it's going to cost me 10 grand and how much time off of work, which I can't do as a single mother. And it's like, what is she supposed to do? There's literally, and that's one story out of so many. And I don't know what the solution is, but all I know is I'm just going to keep talking about it and sharing experiences. So if we can maybe have that seed of thought in someone's mind while they're going through the surgery, while they have them or while they're sick, to just have that there and not, if you're told you're crazy, like you're not, you know your body and you got to fight for it. So keep fighting for it. Don't shut the fuck about it.
No, exactly.
Have to
fight for your right to not be sick all the time.
Yeah. Well, it used to be to party and now it's like to not get attacked by all these endocrine disruptors. Like,
yeah.
We'll remake the song.
One, I guess, last question from me. You mentioned, and this is something, another thing that we have like experienced the same, that you know your body would have rejected your implants because your body reacts to certain things. For me, it's been the Mirena and piercings and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Do you want to share like what you've found that you've reacted badly to?
Yeah. So piercings are the same thing. When I was a child, I got my ears pierced like as a baby, like most of us do. And it completely grew over and I couldn't wear any jewelry unless it was like gold plated. I guess it's a princess. So, you know, I just get rashes like very easy about things and, medications and let's say even recreational drugs and drinking hits me really hard. Like, I developed a tolerance as a teenager for sure. And like, obviously cannabis user, I've developed it, but, any medication I would just like any of the side effects I would have, like same with birth control, like any birth control that I had a bad reaction to. I am allergic to black pepper, which is very difficult, to eat cause it's in everything all the time. I think it was the birth control. I think at the end of the day, how my body reacted to birth control, like that was just it for me. I was like, I can't. And at the same time, I'm a recovered pill addict. I would go to the doctors and get Tylenol 3 for my period pain. And I was 16. They would give me a bottle of 100 and they would just leave me on my way. And I like addict have tendencies. So I would just eat them and I would just, you know, and I would get all the bad side effects that came with eating the bad Tylenol 3, but I didn't care because it kind of numbed me, right? So I went through years of birth control attack, pharmaceuticals, recreational drugs, drinking, all that kind of stuff. And so I think that all of those things attributed to my really bad mental health and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of just made a promise to myself in my 30s that I'm done doing all the bad things and I'm done treating my body like a frat house. And I'm going to, because maybe my body doesn't react to these things. Maybe it's what I'm doing to it and all the toxics I'm putting into it that's making it react in a different way. I don't know. But yeah, same with you. Reactions to my skin, some food, any medication that I've taken. So now I don't even take Advil. Like I maybe take Advil like one time a week. And yeah, so I'm just very skeptical of things that I put in my body because like I said, even caffeine, like I don't drink coffee. And I'll have some pre-workout and I'm just like wired. like this is, I'm never drinking coffee because I don't think I'll have friends.
I can't have caffeine after about 12 o'clock.
That's fair.
Like, I can have a mocha. Like, my partner calls it a cup of lies because it's not a real coffee, but it does have some caffeine in it. And, like, you know, I would sort of try and have that by 10 o'clock because if I have caffeine after lunchtime, I can't sleep. So there's another thing. One thing I also asked for testing for, I don't know whether you've had this tested before, but the MTHFR gene.
No, I have no testing. I'm terrified.
So that was like one thing when the naturopath was filling out the form. I was like, one thing I wouldn't mind testing down the track is the gene. And I'm like, I really want to swear whenever I see that acronym. And she's like, oh, look, I can just tick the box here. Like, that's how easy it was for her. Because I felt like if I went to my GP and asked for that, that she'd be like, why? Like, you know, that this is just another, I mean, they wouldn't necessarily fight that, but you can tell what's going on in the head on another one of those internet fad things, but there's more awareness coming to that and your body doesn't detox as well. So I wonder whether, because of the fact that I've rejected so many things that my body's not able to manage that toxic load very well. So there'll be another development hopefully coming.
And it gets overwhelming. Like, that's one thing I know when people are trying to go for a more natural light and they're trying to remove this toxic, because when you do get affected, like you had with your birth control and your breast implants, and as well as like with me, you get affected by stuff, then you start really looking into, okay, what am I eating? What are the products that I'm putting on my body? And when I step back, I had a girlfriend that passed away at 26 from cancer. And when I look at, you know, I hear about all these makeups and all the food that we're eating and the fake food and all that and the things that we're breathing, it gets overwhelming. And I looked at her and I was like, oh my gosh, like maybe that happened to her where her body just wasn't set up to take this toxic load. She, you know, was always putting makeup on. It was just we were all doing it, but maybe there's just something in her body that couldn't handle that toxic load. And I feel the same way. Like, I was malnourished. I wasn't drinking water. I don't know if I knew what sleep was. I was doing recreational drugs, drinking, mental health. I came from a divorced family. I was on pharmaceuticals. I was on birth controls. Like, there were so many things working against me. And so it's just like, I think some people just by genetics aren't set up to fight that, you know. So it's like anytime that someone would get sick, I would get sick. You know, I'm not like that now. I don't, like, knock on wood, the last time I got sick was like a year and a half ago. I don't know what it was. I don't want to be controversial, but I didn't test for any of the things that happened in the last couple of years. So I don't know. It was just like a little flu for a couple of days. And it's been about three years. I had the C word before it was popular. And then the last couple of years have been really, really healthy. And I think that's because I have removed all of those things. So I don't know if as a teenager, if I wouldn't have done all those things, if I would have been as reactive, you know. Like, I think that my lifestyle and the frat house that I treated my body like for the last, you know, for a good decade and 2 decades, you know, really had an effect on that. And so I don't think that all women are going to get affected by breast implants, because I think some of them probably just started off with healthier bodies, like not in a rude way, just genetically healthier. Their lifestyles, you know, didn't affect them as much. So I think a lot of people, what sucks for you guys is like, women that have had them and they're like, well, I've never had any problems, so therefore your experience is not valid. And it's like, okay, well, must have been nice to have such a good genetic makeup that it didn't, you know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, so that I think for me is like knowing how bad birth control hit me, how bad, like I said, like recreational drugs used to take me out. Like, I can't even handle friggin' caffeine, you know, so anything foreign in my body really freaked me out. And since I moved away from all that stuff, bad eating, you know, eating whole foods and having vitamins sometimes and drinking water and getting outside and being active, like, I'm the best health of my life. And also not being an addict to the gym, because 7 days a week training ain't good, y'all. You have to have balance too, right? So, you know, I think, but it got overwhelming. I was like, oh my God, everything we're doing is attacking us. And I went down those rabbit holes and put my tin hat on a little too hard. But I think if you just start slowly changing the things that stress you out, you can slowly start having a less toxic load life. But don't get wrapped up into it and don't go down those rabbit holes. It's dangerous. Gosh,
goodness, yeah. It can, once you start looking into those things, yeah, it's where do you stop, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Or where do you start even? Like, what do you start with, right? So it's just, yeah, I think it's important for everyone to just, I don't know, I have to self-parent myself. I'm like, you know, you could eat all this bad chocolate, but, you know, you should probably have a vegetable first, you know, like it all comes down to your brain. But like we said at the beginning of the show, it's all about mindset, right? And all these things. And people have to practice grace with themselves too on their journeys. I'm sure you probably had a lot of moments where you were really hard on yourself. Why am I not healing faster? Why am I not doing this? And I think that's such a disservice to ourselves because we all do it. But yeah, work on your mindset and give yourself grace. But also be accountable. There's that line, right? Where it's just like you can't wallow in and be like, well, life is so hard. I'm just going to eat chocolate cake every day for 3 weeks and not think that that's going to have repercussions, right? You could do it, but probably best not to. But yeah, I just advise everyone to just talk to others. Always talk to others about stuff, you know, be open to a different opinion and a different experience that might not be yours. The minute I started doing that, holy crap, did I get humbled.
Absolutely. Is there anything else you wanted to share with us before we wrap up today?
No, I think we covered a lot. This is awesome. Thank you so much. It's so weird being on this side. I hope I did the guest part justice.
Absolutely.
But I would just say that I just encourage everyone to really make sure they're understanding what you're making your choices for. And if that is the right choice for you, heck yeah. Like, I'm all for it. For me, if I would have got them, it would have been for other people. It would have been for outside validation. It wouldn't have been for myself personally. That's just my own personal thing. So I just make sure if you're making those decisions that you've done. And I hate saying do your research because that has been such a terrible sentence over the last couple of years. But I don't know what else to say besides that sentence. Just make sure that if you are going to a surgeon that they're being honest with you, that they're open with you. In my opinion, if from what I've, you know, being on the back end and being an advocate without it, just make sure you have informed consent. Make sure, you know, I don't want to say anyone's safe because I've not heard anyone is specifically safe. Every girl that I've talked to has had a different kind, a different type, a different texture, and they've all have had, you know what I mean? It's not just been like this one teardrop type titty is bad. It's been all around, right? So just make sure if you are getting them, you have that money for the explant if you need to do that. That is my, I think, my biggest thing that I think most of these women, yourself included, you know, that was a big struggle, is that financial issue as well, right? You know, and if you're not able to work, then you can't save the money, or, you know, and so, yeah. And then also, don't stop advocating for yourself in any form of your health, whether it's your breast implants, your Marina. Like, don't have one doctor tell you. I've known some of these girls that have gone to like 8 to 10 different doctors before they actually got help. Do not stop advocating. Do not believe the lie that you are crazy. I mean, maybe you are. I am, but we all are a little bit. It's all good. We got to be a little bit crazy. But like, when you know something's off in your body, you know. And the longer you wait, it's not going to be better. Usually it doesn't just go away, right? And so, like you said, if you waited for that whole year, if you wait till September to go back to this GP, what is she going to say? Oh, now you're double. Whoops, we should have done something back then. Like, no, don't. If you know it's not right, keep advocating. I'm always here. I'm always here to talk. If you have a, like, same, you know, same with Bianca. If you're here, you want to talk about it. I've not had boobs. Obviously, I can't relate to those that have had explants, but I've been around a lot of women that do. I share a lot on my show. And yeah, just be real with yourselves, babes. That's why we called the show Be Real Babe, because it was, you know, I think the best thing you can do for yourself is be honest with yourself. And it is not easy. It is not easy. None of us can say it's easy, but we can say it's rewarding as hell when you start being honest with yourself and you start showing up for yourself and you start honoring, you know, what's best for you and not what the outside world wants you to be. Right? You're more than your boobs. You're more than your face. You're more than your ass, even though I like to work it out all the time and make it bigger and have that focus. But like, you know, just know that you're so much more than your body, but there's nothing wrong with also working on it either. Right? So just love yourself. Be honest with yourself when you're making these choices. Make sure you're informed in anything that you're doing. And that's about it. That's about it. Come talk to me if you need to. Thank you for having me on the show. That's amazing. I'm having such a good time. I'm going to have to ask. I'm going to bug people now. Like, someone asked me to be the guest. I'm now professional. I'm guesting. Yeah, that's about it. Make sure to, yeah, just honor yourself. And honor yourself and make sure everything's in good intention with everything that you do. And you should be successful. And don't let anybody medically gaslight you.
No. Keep pushing.
Yeah.
Like, you're right to be... feel well.
Yeah, to feel like a normal human being. That's ridiculous that we have to even fight for that, right? But unfortunately we do, and I think it makes people stronger in the end, right? What doesn't kill you will always make you stronger. And look at all these women, look at where they are now. You know, if you're at the beginning of your journey, look where all these glowing women are now, right? Don't lose hope. There's always hope.
Exactly.
That's all I got.
Thank you so much for joining me, Brandy. Thank you for sharing your story. It's not a non-story because it's still a story. It's not an
implant. My non-breast implant story.
There you go.
Yeah, of course, anytime. Thank you for having me.
Cool. And make sure you go and give Be Real Babe podcast a follow and a like and a listen.
Yes, please do.
Bye.
Bye. This podcast shares my own experience and research. I'm not a medical or health professional. You can find me on Instagram at couldit_be_podcast. Thank you to my incredibly talented partner, Jacob Tengdahl, for the intro and outro music. All recording, editing, and artwork is done by me. Thank you for listening.